Good morning. Thank you for attending. Very first off, I want to give credit to my co-author, Katie Lewis, who's in the audience, as well as Dr. Wayne Keeling at AgriLife, and also to those who helped on the project. Dustin Kelly's also in the audience. I appreciate his help, as well as those who work with me. This project is taking place in the Texas High Plains. In the Southern High Plains, we are characterized by soils that came from Aeolian deposits. Where this project is under a Pullman clay loam soil. We are semi-arid in climate. We have about typical 44 or so centimeters of precipitation, but that's very variable. It's variable not only from year to year, but it's variable from one square mile to the next. We have several locations that we work across, and it's not unusual for the farm right next to us to have gotten an inch more than we did right across the turn row. Our average daily temperature is about 17.2 degrees Celsius, and we use a lot of water, about 14,385 million liters per day of water is used, and about 78% of that comes from groundwater, mainly from the Ogallala Aquifer. Our discharge is much greater than our recharge in this area, and for that reason, we're a little concerned. The major crop in that area is going to be upland cotton in this portion. Texas produces about 38.9% of the U.S. upland cotton, and this is based on 2014 numbers. In our area, the part that's circled, we produce about 43.7 in the Southern High Plains. That's the area where our project is. In the Low Plains, we have about 13%, and then in the Northern High Plains, we have about 14%. And even in such a small geographic region, we are dealing with big differences from location from north to south in soils, in climate, and in the management practices of farmers. We kind of have a perfect storm in West Texas for a lot of soil and movement. So we have high air temperatures, we have low humidity, we have high wind speeds, we have high solar radiation, and we have low soil moisture, which is all perfect for growing cotton, except when they need water. We have limited root system issues, we have turgor pressure issues, we have closure of stomata, we have increased canopy temperatures, which can also increase in our disease that's found on our cotton plants, and we have decreased root production under some of these conditions. The picture is a 2011 haboob that came through Texas Tech, and that's just before it closed over the stadium on campus. Under conventional cotton production, which is usually an intensive monoculture system, when we're looking at water demands, it leads to decreased soil quality and water resources. We have seen that research has shown that crop yield and organic matter content and overall soil health can be increased by crop rotation and tillage practices, so changing some of those. And we have seen yields of up to 44% increase when cotton's rotated with sorghum. So how do we water these crops in West Texas? We have about five different ways of irrigating or not irrigating our crops. We have a dry land situation where the only water that comes on is from precipitation. We're going to have an in-furrow irrigation, which is pretty limited in our area. It's high in water loss, and it's pretty high in energy as well. We have conventional pivot irrigation, and that comes in a lot of different forms, but in conventional irrigation, one of the issues is that we're applying water at a high intensity over the crop canopy or into the crop canopy, which then increases humidity and we get a lot more pathology issues going on. We have LIPA irrigation, and you can see up on the screen some of the advantages and disadvantages of LIPA, low energy precise application. One of the great things about LIPA is that you can retrofit old pivot systems to this new LIPA technology, newer LIPA technology. And LIPA is going to apply your water at a lower energy below the plant canopy and more directly to the soil so that we have a greater chance of having water infiltration. One of the disadvantages of LIPA is you're going to have to till. You've got to go through and put dikes in so that that water can be kept in the furrow so that it can be infiltrated into the system, and you have to do it on fairly flat terrain. The other irrigation system that we use is subsurface drip. And they come in all shapes and sizes and all depths and sizes. There's a lot of research going on at Texas Tech in particular on row spacing and drip depth and talking about root physiology and how that cotton plant will grow, whether you need to put subsurface drip under every row or every other row, 30-inch spacing, 60-inch spacings. It is varied. Part of the advantages of that is you've got water going directly to the root system. You have nutrient loss reduction because you can do fertigation straight through those, and you don't have the issues with surface runoff. One of the disadvantages is the high initial cost. I heard the other day that with current cotton prices, it takes about 4 years to recover the cost to put in a drip system on a field. And based on this year's prices, nobody's going to be paying off any drip systems anytime soon. This study occurs at a little location called Helm. It's under a pivot. It's part of our AgriLife research program. The objectives of the study are going to be to quantify the effect of tillage and rotation on crop yield, quantify the effect of water amount and timing on yield by rotation, identify verticillium populations using genetic marker analysis. We're going to document the overall effectiveness of LEPA, so looking at how was that system designed, what were some of the pros and cons of designing it the way that we did, and how effective was it in delivering the water to the plant at the right location in the right time and the right amount. We're going to measure the overall change in soil parameters and soil health over the course of the project, and we're going to maximize nutrient application timing to key growth periods within the plant, especially in a cotton sorghum rotation. The pivot is 53 hectares, that's about 131 acres, and it's all under the LEPA irrigation system. We have four crop rotations. We have a continuous cotton, a continuous sorghum, a cotton wheat fallow, and a cotton that is under alternative timing of irrigation and a conventional timing of irrigation. And I'm gonna point out that the continuous cotton is a wheat fallow, terminated wheat cover crop. We have four water levels, a dry land situation, 0.5, 1, and 1.5 times the base irrigation, and one wedge is further divided into those two alternative timings. We have two tillage treatments, conventional and minimal till. And the reason I say minimal till is because we have to incorporate some of our herbicides in order to get them down below the surface, so there's one pass that goes over to incorporate those. The project's been ongoing for 2 years. We're in end of our third year. The first couple of years were kind of a leveling year. The pivot had been used under a lot of different planting regimes, and we wanted to get it into some sort of a constant rotation measure. The data that I have, I'm going to present from 2014, and I'm going to save that down for the cotton information and not present the sorghum, but if you're interested in the sorghum data, I can show you where to get that as well. So our methodologies, we do put down a pre-emergent herbicide, usually a yellow, a trifluralin. A trifluralin, its mode of action is going to be on weed germination, and so it has to be put underneath the surface. It's highly highly susceptible to photodegradation, so in some way you have to get that incorporated into the soil. That was applied on May 2nd. We planted on May 19th. In 2014, and had to turn around and plant again on June 4th due to a weather event, and then we have our irrigation. So if you're wondering what 0.5 or 1 times the base irrigation is, it's about 60% return to crop ET. And so it's the way to use evapotranspiration in order to meet the cropping or the water needs of the crop. We harvested cotton on about the 18th of November. During 2014, we found that the lint yields were lower for cotton that was produced under reduced tillage. This follows along with most research that I've seen on cotton and minimal or no-till. Lint yields under a cotton sorghum and a cotton terminated wheat rotation were not significantly different. When you put enough water on, things tend to overcome a lot of the stress that they're put under. Cotton planted after terminated wheat cover had the greatest response to irrigation, despite the tillage treatment, so it didn't matter if it was no-till or conventional till. And overall, the 1.5 times base irrigation had the highest yields, except in the cotton sorghum rotation under conventional tillage, and that difference was not significant. So along I came in 2014 and decided to start a PhD program, and this is where my PhD work will be done. Dustin and I and a few others spent, and Katie, have spent a good number of hours doing soil sampling. Intensive soil sampling had never been done on this pivot, so we decided to undertake that. We sampled by water level, tillage, rotation, and timing, and we did that at 5 depths. Where we could get through the caliche layer, we went to 5 depths. We did some intensive sampling. You can see over on the line kind of pointing towards me that there's an area that looks like it was more intensively sampled than it was. That is a location of a nested sorghum nutrient trial that we have going on. The soil analysis that we are in the process of doing, it's taking a very long time to process all of these soils. Our nutrients, soil aggregate composition, soil organic matter, pH, and then soil health using the Haney soil health test. In-season measurements have been taken, and end-of-season measurements were taken. These include stand counts, vigor and emergence, heights, and then we have a bunch of N words, which I had to learn when I came into the cotton world. Note above white flower, note of first fruiting branch, note of uppermost cracked bowl, and note of uppermost harvestable bowl, and then total nodes. And I kind of put a little diagram down there just so you could kind of understand, if you're not familiar with cotton, what that looks like. We also took yield by treatment and rotation, and then we are doing some economic analysis on that, loan return values and things like that. And then each of those had their samples sent off for HBI analysis. Our desired outcomes from this project and from my PhD project are to quantify the differences in cotton system yields by rotation, irrigation, amount, and timing, which is important in West Texas, and by tillage. Be able to educate the farmers on our results and on the importance of soil health. So if you remember, I said that cotton yields are reduced under a no-till system. Well, we need to educate our farmers that despite the fact that there may be a little bit of a yield drag under that system, that it's very important for soil health, especially in our area with the amount of soil that can move from year to year, to preserve our soil health. And then identify low-hanging fruit that farmers can employ quickly and effectively to increase yields while decreasing input costs so that their profitability goes up. This picture, interestingly enough, was taken last Wednesday. We had the opportunity to watch a $750,000 three-day-old cotton stripper baler go up in flames. And this was after most of it was put out. They were trying to figure out how to get to the bale of cotton inside the machine to get the fire put out. And this is a few of our firefighters standing on top of the machine working on that. Are there any questions? Yes, sir.
You said that following terminated wheat, there was a yield benefit, and you said something about that overcame the effect of conservation tillage. So was that a no-till trial or test there?
Yeah, it was. Yes, sir. Katie, can you attest to that? Would you?
Okay.
So would that be part of the answer for farmers that want to do no-till, if they add a cover crop to the system, so that they can end up having a positive yield benefit?
A lot of times, so cover crops in West Texas are a little different than cover crops in the Midwest. So I came from Iowa, where cover crops were pretty big. Cover crops in Iowa were used to increase soil organic matter. They were also used to keep nitrogen stable in the soil. In West Texas, we don't get the return to soil organic matter quite from the cover crop like other places do. And so a lot of farmers have to look back and forth and balance their budget as to how much water is that cover crop going to take up, how quickly can we get that cover crop broken back down in that soil, how quick are the soil microbes working. And I would say probably for the most part, if somebody is planting a cover crop in West Texas, it's only to stabilize soil over the winter months. If we don't have some sort of cover crop or cover on that soil, we have a tremendous amount of saltation and soil movement that occurs. And so it's more of an education of figuring out, number one, what those benefits are going to be under those rotations, above and beyond stabilizing soil, and then quantifying those effects and really understanding what kind of return that we're going to get as far as soil health is concerned. Okay, thank you.